Hey, I'm Zozier, and this is A State of Love and Trust.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the State of Love and Trust. It's a Pearl Jam podcast. I'm your host, Jason Carapesi. And this week, we've got a hell of a show. We've got a gentleman who is on the heels of his third performance at the Paramount Theater at the Loose Groove review party over there at the Paramount in Seattle. And before we get to him, I want to remind you that if you are listening on the audio-only version, please subscribe, rate, review. Apple especially says that now the way to find new podcasts is by having seen written reviews. So if you could write a review, if I could speak English, that would be super. And if you are watching on YouTube, go ahead and subscribe, hit the bell, like this episode, leave a comment, continue the conversation. That would be awesome. If you are interested in getting more content from us, we have a Patreon. There's the link right there. And we've got a whole bunch of bonus episodes, encore episodes, as we call them, some videos with photographers Lance Mercer, Charles Peterson, talking about the stories behind their famous photos. And we've got a really cool series with Brad Clausen, the graphic poster artist, on how he makes his posters. That is super awesome. If you'd like to watch those, get in the old Patreon server and join up. That's easy as that. Cool. Okay. Housekeeping out of the way. This gentleman is a singer-songwriter. He is fantastic. He is from Georgia, and he's on the show right now. It is Zosher. How's it going, my friend?
It's going pretty good. Can't complain. How are you?
How is West Seattle today?
Oh, West Seattle is surprisingly very sunny. I'm sorry.
What was that now? I thought I heard sunny.
Yes, sunny. And it made me want to play my own song, Sun Song, but that's a slight plug. Anywho.
Plug it.
But West Seattle is actually pretty good. It's windy, but sunny. Can't complain. I was actually on Alki about 2 hours ago, just driving and looking at the water. And I was like, damn, if only it wasn't so cold. But
that water's probably freezing.
It's freezing. Even in the summer, it's freezing. And I don't understand why people even go there just for the fun of it. But West Seattle is really nice. How are you doing?
No one's ever asked me that before on the show.
Oh, it's a southern thing, you know?
You are a sweet man. I am fine, actually. It's quote unquote cold here, which means it's 60 degrees Fahrenheit. Other than that, I'm feeling pretty good. I got coffee in me. I had a little workout this morning. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling strong. Nice. I want to talk about probably the most recent thing that you've done, which is a big deal where I'm from and where I'm sitting. And that's the Loose Groove Review. As I mentioned at the top of the show there, this was your third time playing the Paramount, right?
Yes.
Talk to me about that show.
This particular show was very special to me, just because I actually got to do my own set. So I just remember coming into soundcheck, seeing Stone, seeing Johnny Polonsky, Mason Jennings, Brittany Davis, and a bunch of others. And it kind of hit me all at once that, damn, I'm about to play at the Paramount, like, by myself. Like, of course, with the accompaniment of Jeff Fielder and Matt Chamberlain, but, like, you know, the times that I did it before, the first time that I performed at the Paramount, I did it with Maya Rudolph's cover band, Princess. And then the second time was for a donor party with my old nonprofit that's not mine, but that I used to work for, Totem Star. So it was always something. It was always for something different. So this time it really was about me and about the label, of course. And Stone and everybody was just really excited. They were like, you killed it. Your voice echoed through the entire theater. I was like, damn, I really didn't even pay attention. I was kind of nervous, but I just kind of smiled and played it off. So this show was actually really incredible. And I got a new guitar from Stone. So
you got a new guitar from Stone. Which guitar did you get?
I got a Stratocaster, and I've never had a Stratocaster. I've had a Strat Squire. That was my first guitar ever. But I just remember we were rehearsing, and I was like, hey, Stone, you know, I really want a Strat for my birthday. And he was like, okay, I got you. I'll get that for you. Because
said I want a Strat for my birthday. Like, did you think that he was going to be like, sure, I got you?
I honestly got 40 of them. Exactly. He has like 50. Somebody was like, yeah, Fender gives Pearl Jam, you know, fucking guitars all the time. And I didn't think anything of it. And it was really said as a joke. It wasn't like me to be dead serious of like, I want a Strat. And he got off of the stage for sound check, and then he was like, hey, I got something for you. And I don't know what was going through my head. I thought maybe he would be like, here's a donut, or here's some breath mints. Like something like that wasn't important at all. And then walk over to the case and he opens it up and he's like, hey, this is for you. And it's a Gray Strat, and it's custom shop. So I was like, oh my goodness.
He gave you a custom shop. Oh
yeah.
Baby.
I was like, I play guitars.
Yeah.
I don't know models. I could care less about that. I've always just been a person that's like, oh, I see a guitar, I'm going to play it. You know, people were telling me like, this is really big. Like, this is really cool. I was like, yeah, it looks really nice. Actually in Loose Groove's latest post, if you go to the, final picture, it's me and Stone hugging, and it was actually at that moment when he gave me the guitar.
Oh, it's awesome.
So Stone is a really cool guy, and my life changed because of him. Billy Jean, Regan Hager, and just Loose Groove in general, and also shout out to Thaddeus Turner, because I wouldn't have met Stone without Thad.
And I have a question about all that in a little bit. I definitely want to get into that, being that this is mainly a Pearl Jam show. So but a couple more things about this show is that, you know, from the clips that I saw, and I was unfortunately not able to get up there, but I know some people who were, what they told me was nothing but rave reviews. And then the clips that I saw, it felt like almost like a high school reunion, like a party, like old friends getting together. And like, there's a lot of guesting, like Britney came out, right? And then with you and, you know, how cool is it to have Matt Chamberlain drum for you? I mean, the guy's a freaking legend.
Funny thing is that I played with Matt before.
Did you really? I didn't know that.
So Matt was the, and I forgot what it's actually called, but we'll call it, say, liaison for More Music at the Moor. So he basically was I'll just call him the conductor. And he played, I don't think he actually played drums, but he had a song called Hometown Hero. And this was during the time that I loved playing the looper. It was like, this is who I am. I can't change who I am. He was like, fuck that.
Well, I know I like the looper, but we'll get to that.
Yeah, the looper is fantastic. I mean, I haven't practiced in probably a year or two, but at the time, that was just my thing. And I just remember him telling me, like, you need to learn how to play with people. And I was like, whatever. And it turned out being a great performance. And seeing him again for the Loose Groove review, I was just like, hey. So this is kind of crazy. Like, you were teaching me before, and now we're playing together, like, on equal footing. And super nice guy, learned a lot from him, and just kind of helped me establish my style a little bit more playing with him because of just his wicked drum playing. Like, looking at it from the side is absolutely insane. And the fact that he played for like 5 hours straight was also crazy. But
What was your favorite part about the night, besides the free guitar?
Besides the free guitar, that's always going to be at the top. I guess my favorite part of the night was actually when Stone introduced me to stage.
Really? How come?
So one of the sound guys was trying to hand me the guitar, and Stone was standing on the cable. So he couldn't go anywhere. No, by accident. So he didn't even know that his foot was on the cable. So I'm like trying to grab the guitar, and the guy, Neil, he's just like, it's all right, just give him a second, give him a second. And then he finally hands me the guitar, and I'm walking over there, and Stone then recognizes that his foot is on the cable. So I start pulling the cable, and he starts giving me more of the cable, get to the mic. And I'm like, hey, everybody, how's everyone doing? And everybody's like, we're doing good. Yeah. And I just see Stone over to the right. He's like, everything all right? And I'm like, everything's fine, Stone.
Just get my damn cable.
And it was literally one of the funniest things ever. And like the night before, at the Rabbit Box, he did the same thing. And it just kind of reminded me of like,
really?
Not the cable part, but just kind of like,
okay,
standing to the side of like, is everything all right? It's like a dad talking to his son, like,
yeah.
Like trying to fix a car, like, you know, I'm gonna let you do your thing, but I'm also gonna watch just to make sure that, you know, nothing bad happens. So that was probably my favorite part. And of course, playing with Britt, love Britt so much, and literally one of the most talented people I've ever met. It's like, it makes no freaking sense. Like, our latest single, Complicated, she produced most of the beat. And it was just kind of like a scratch idea. It was really her just fucking around. That was the craziest part. And it just kind of kept building. And we were like, keep going. And then once the horns got added, it was like, yo, this is a certified hit. Hopefully it blows up on TikTok or something like that. But
I was going to ask about that later, but let's talk about Complicated right now. I mean, I think this is the, you said it with Britney. I was going to ask how that all came to be, because it does sound like the most produced, the most every tool used in the tool chest kind of thing. Like, it's got everything, and it seems to feature all the influences that you have, and it makes me want to dance. And I'm not a good dancer, so that's a big deal. That's better than what I would do. Please, don't show me up, Zosha. This is my show, okay?
My bad, Jason.
No, but like, talk to me about how you got to work with her on this song, because I can't get it out of my head.
Well, so Britt works with Josh Evans, who's primarily a Loose Grooves engineer, and he's done a lot of stuff for a lot of people. And Stone also just wanted me to really work with Britt. And, you know, earlier, as I told you about with Matt Chamberlain and him telling me, like, you need to work with people. Mm-hmm. It was kind of new to me working with somebody. So it was really kind of like the first time that I've worked with somebody in the studio, aside from the engineer and maybe, you know, the session artist, because I recorded in Nashville like years ago, but that's neither here or there. So being one-on-one with somebody and trying to basically get both of our styles on the same level, in a sense, because, you know, I'm pop. Like, I tried being like, I'm pop soul, like try to get a little jazz or whatever. But I'm pop and Britt is funk and R&B. So it was like, okay, how do we put these two together? And I'm glad that you brought up like, oh, it has all of my influences in it, but it also has all of her influences in it. And that was kind of the most beautiful thing. So, and Complicated just happened to be the song that she freaking loved. And we recorded about like three other songs. So Sun Song was one of the songs, Complicated, and then two others. And, but Complicated literally kind of took the show of that day of recording, because all of us were just like, fuck it. Like, let's just keep working on this. And fun fact, I wrote Complicated in like 30 minutes. So,
Isn't that your thing though? I feel like a lot of the songs you've talked about, you've written in like 30 minutes.
Yeah, I have a real addiction to writing songs.
We're gonna dive into that for sure. So it was Complicated in the same session as Sun Song, because I know that Sun Song came out single some months back last year. So has Complicated been kind of sitting, just waiting to burst out?
Yes. And we actually had another song in mind to release, and it just wasn't coming together. And then Josh was like, what about Complicated? And I totally forgot about Complicated. I was like, what is that again? Went to my files and I was like, this song's pretty good. Listened to it like a second time. I was like, this song's a fucking banger. So yeah, it's been sitting on the back burner for since last May.
So yeah. Wow. Okay. All right. Well, let's backpedal. Not physically, because that'd be bad for the show. But in your life, let's start back a little bit earlier. You are from Augusta, Georgia.
Yeah.
Most people know that as the home of the majors, but home of the masters, and also James Brown, which you weren't really influenced by, right?
No, but to give a little more context to that, I actually knew his daughters. When I was like 11, I was part of this group called Jamp, and it was led by his daughters to give back, teach kids how to play music and stuff. And like my family, like my dad's side of the family, you know, James Brown was known everywhere. Like,
yeah,
everybody has a James Brown story. The same way that people say that everybody has an Eddie Vedder story in West Seattle, everybody has a James Brown story in Augusta. So I always heard stories about James Brown. And also my first mentor, Joe Stevenson, knew James Brown learned a lot from him. So I wouldn't say that I was necessarily influenced by his music, but kind of his gravitas and personality and ability to, like, everybody loved him, regardless of what crazy things that he may have done. Like, everybody loves him and can remember a time when James Brown made them, like, smile. So I definitely can say that I'm influenced by that with James Brown.
Now, you say that you are a genre bender. I think that's very apt because, you know, when I go through some of your covers on YouTube, you know, you're covering Mac Miller to Chris Stapleton to Randy Newman. I mean, where did this wide variety of influences come from? I mean, like, were your parents playing a bunch of different music in the house? Was it on in the car? Like, how did you hear all these things and go, yes?
All of the above. Okay, so cool.
Next question.
Yeah, but actually, like, there's context to it. My dad used to be a MC back in the day, so I grew up listening to Rakim and Eric B, Mobb Deep, and then my mom has no artistic talent whatsoever, just loves the arts.
Mom.
No offense, Mom. But she'll even say that, and grew up listening to Earth, Wind, and Fire, and
yes.
Also a lot of 80s music, and just kind of, it was always something different when we were in the car. And then my older brother, he was always doing something in the city of Atlanta. So we would always be in the car and so many different types of music would play. And I particularly love 2000s music. I feel like that was the best era, but then again, I am 24. So yes. I only remember kind of what I know. But you know, it's just, I just listened to so many different types, not because I was forced to. It was just part of our life. Like, my mom and I will jokingly call certain songs like sticky notes. So you have, you know, a yellow sticky note, which is kind of, it's good memories, but bad at the same time. Then you have red sticky notes that are like, yeah, no, we can't listen to the song. And then you have pink ones that are kind of like bittersweet, but you still listen to it just because it warms your soul. So, you know, music has always just been a huge part of my life. And Mac Miller, I absolutely love Mac Miller. I wish I could have met him before he passed. He's also a huge influence. So, yeah.
Who would you say then inspired you to actually want to make music and learn the guitar specifically?
Well, the guitar part, it was Green Day.
No which kidding.
A lot of people would not expect. Yeah. When I, for my first teacher and when I had the Strat Squire, he was trying to teach me how to read music and stuff. And I actually grew up playing piano first. But when we moved to Augusta, we didn't have enough room for a grand piano. So my mom and my godfather got me the Strat, and my mom would send me to class, and the teacher, Devren, he would be like, okay, we're going to read this. And I was like, I don't want to read that. I want to learn how to play When I Come Around by Green Day. And that was literally my first song that I ever learned how to play on the guitar. And from then on, I like learned so many Green Day songs. So after that, every single class would just be, okay, what song do you want to learn today? So that's honestly how I learned how to play by ear, because it wasn't like my teacher was looking up the notes. It was just that he was just going along the fretboard, finding out what the chord was, and then just playing. And so that's how I really got inspired to play the guitar. And writing wise, it was Ed Sheeran. Like, I remember when the A-Team dropped and how happy I was to hear that. And I think what brought me to like loving the song so much was the imagery of the song. And I always used to write like raps and whatever, and like, okay, I'm this hard, you know me, I'm from the AUG. And once I heard Ed Sheeran like do his thing, I was like, wow, you can really transform a song by just words. Like, you can literally have a movie playing in your head by listening to a song. And my brother helped me illegally download that whole album. Plus, I used to listen to
we
it.
We don't back. Condone illegal downloads.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We don't. Program. Sorry, my Wink. Bad. Wink. Actually, yeah. I don't even think that you can do that anymore now that I think about it.
I can neither confirm nor deny that that is possible.
All right. Well, I'll leave that for another day. But yeah, so Plus really inspired me. Multiply It really inspired me. And also Heavier Things by John Mayer, which is so funny that Matt Chamberlain played on that album. And he was just like, yeah, it's a really good album. Aside from that, yeah, everything else is kind of murky. But yeah, with just inspirations to get me into music, it was definitely Ed Sheeran and Green Day. So yeah.
Well, I can very much hear the Ed Sheeran in songs like Mrs. Valentine, for example. So it's on display, but it's your version of it, you know. And we'll talk about more of that songwriting stuff in a little bit. I saw that you were 15 and you were busking out there in Georgia, which for those who don't know is basically just playing on the streets for money, right? For tips.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What's the most money that you made in a day and what did you spend it on?
That's kind of a loaded question.
Let's go, baby.
Probably in a day back then. I actually started busking at 13. But 15 is when I like took it seriously. So every summer I would be at the Augusta Market. It was literally my 9 to 5. So the most that I made probably was like $550.
Yes. Wow.
And consistently though, every Saturday I would make at least $300 to the point where my uncle would come to me. He would be like, man, I need you to help me pay some bills. Throw some money at me.
Don't tell anybody how much you're making, Zoger.
He just happened to be
I got 15 too. Bucks again. Darn
it. I'm like, geez, 50. I can't believe people didn't believe in me. And I would get so disappointed whenever I would make $20 or less, but yeah. And what I spent it on, food. Definitely food. I think the only thing that I bought that was big was a Casio keyboard that nice. I started playing probably more in the last year.
You still have it. Awesome.
I still have it. And I remember part of the reason why I kept it was that Stone was like, hey, I'm going to need you to write some more songs on, you know, the piano, since you grew up playing the piano. I was like, well, I mean, I grew up playing the piano and I could sound out notes, but I don't think that I'm the greatest. I'm not like Brit, like when playing, it's kind of more just, yes, you know, well, the dinosaur little threes. That's it. Just three everywhere. If I want to add a little lick.
Chopsticks.
Hot crust buns is a big one. I think I had to learn hot crust buns.
I know one song and that's When the Saints Go Marching In.
Really?
Two hands too, but like that's the only one.
Oh, when the saints go marching in. Oh, that reminds me of Catholic school. Anywho, but yeah, busking is a huge part of my life. And I try not to do it as much now because somebody gave me that advice. They were like, the more you busk as you are truly like getting into your career, the more you're not driven to like keep going with your career. Because just like, no, when you're a kid doing it, it's kind of like, it's adorable. It's like, oh, this kid's playing music. He's actually pretty good.
This guy's 38 years old and he's on the street playing.
Yeah, like, get a job, brother. I don't do it as much now, but I think that it really, one, helped me learn how to read a crowd. That is the biggest thing that I can get from busking, is learning how to read a crowd, knowing what songs to play, knowing how to crack jokes and make it, you know, appropriate in the time that you say it, and people walking around, and also teaches you how people can be kind to one another. I never really had somebody come up to me and be like, you suck. Now I've had somebody come up to me and say, I was wearing my baggy sweatpants and a raggedy shirt and some ugly ass shoes. And I forgot what song I was singing. And the lady comes up to me and she is like, "Wow, you're really good. If only you looked how you sound." And I was so offended. Come on, lady. I was so offended. But then she dropped a 20 in my case, and I was like, "It's not that serious."
And she's like, "This is for some new socks."
Yeah, exactly. Go get some new pants. Yeah. So, like, that's probably the only thing that somebody has ever said to me that was like rude. But 9 times out of 10, everybody comes up to me and, you know, gives me praise and just like, "Oh my God, like, where do you play?" And it's like, "I play on the street,
right here, bro.
Right here, and open mics." And now I hope that changes. We're doing more venues and stuff. So yeah,
I believe that it will definitely. So from Augusta to Seattle, when you were in high school, you know, that's a big call. First of all, just changing high schools in general is a big culture shock. I did that as well. It was, you know, maybe like just a few towns away. It wasn't across the country like you. But that's a big deal. That's a very formative age to be moving and losing all of your friends and meeting new people. So number one, why move to Seattle?
Me and my mom wanted to change. It's more to that hopefully like in my autobiography I'll get into more, but it's more of just like, now Augusta is the second biggest city in Georgia, but it's really a town. So everybody mm-hmm. knows everyone, everybody stays there. And I always had a dream of, like, I didn't think that would be music that would kind of take me out. It would be more, I just thought of it more of like, okay, I'll go to UC Berkeley, which I didn't. Or I'll go to London, and which I didn't. But I always wanted something more. And my mom, you know, I got that a lot from my mom of just, you know, you don't have to stay in the same place. Because sometimes when you stay in the same place, that'll, you know, halt you from doing what you really need to do. Mm-hmm. And it was between three places. It was San Francisco, Orange County, and Seattle. And my mom got...
Why Orange County?
Those are the places that my mom was getting a job at. So,
oh, I see.
Okay. So right. That's how we really moved out to Seattle. But, you know, just the thought of leaving Augusta, that all came to be just... I was like, we're done. Like, let's go somewhere different. And I moved here when I was a junior in high school. And fun fact, the school that I came from before had 250 students in all that four grades. In all four yes. grades. And I went to West Seattle High School, which is close to 1,000. So that in itself was a culture shock. Mm-hmm. Just like, oh my God, there's so many people. And I had to try to be friends with like at least two. but it wasn't a bad experience. Like, of course it had its ups and downs, just because you being the new kid, also being the kid that does music, and you know, you have people kind of like, he wants to do music, but he's really not gonna do it, yada yada. And then once they would hear me and hear my songs, they would be like, oh my God, like, he actually might make it. and this is also funny. I had a music class and they're teaching guitar. And by this time I'm turning 17. So I've been playing the guitar since I was 10. So I've been playing the guitar for 7 years and I don't shred. I'm more of a rhythm guitarist. So I told the teacher, I was like, "See, I gotta know how to do everything." He was like, "Sure." I was like, "Trust me, I know how to do everything."
Okay, new guy.
Okay, all right, new guy. You think that you're all of that. And I'm like, yeah. Trust me, I know how to play. I know how to keep a tune. And I basically told him, I was like, "How about you grade me on my songs? Like, I write songs and you grade me." Mm-hmm. And he was like, "Actually, that's a good idea." So everybody would be in the room learning how to play guitar. I would be out in the hallway writing songs, and people would literally like be like, "Can I get a bathroom pass?" and go out and just sit with me as I write a song. And they're just like, "So what made you think of this word?" And I'm like, and I passed, of course, with an A.
Of course.
Everything else, E. Kind of. I was just trying to get by. I was just trying to graduate. Exactly. I graduated. That's the biggest thing.
And I also, that's how I felt about, I had an elective. No, I'm sorry. An elective. I had a core. I had to do one math class my freshman year of college. I had to do one. and I got a D because I did not care. It had nothing to do with my major. And I'm like, I'm just getting it out of the way. Exactly. And my parents were pissed. And what's funny is it was the exact same math class I had taken the previous year in high school and aced.
So, oh, then that makes total sense why you would just be like, yeah, I don't really need to do
fun,
this.
Fun fact, kids. Exactly. Try when you need to. Wait, so let me ask you. So these songs that you're crafting in the hallway that gets you the A in your music class, did any of them then become any of your released songs?
Yes. Miss Valentine.
Oh.
Hurricane. And those are really the only two. And
okay.
So over cool, the though. Yeah, over the course of since 12 to now, I know I've definitely written over 400 songs. Where all I don't know where all of them are. Like some, like at least 150 are on our old computer that really is like on, it's not even on its last leg. It's kind of dead. But, you know, of course, if you give it a little shock, it'll come back alive.
I was going to say, bring it to the genius part. Like, sir, I need these songs.
I need these songs. Just take them off. Take them off the Word document. And he's like, dude, we can't even like charge it right now. I'm like, there's a way. I'll help you figure it out. But those songs I was writing back then, it was still like me trying to find my sound. And of course, you know, it was the biggest influence was Ed Sheeran. So I was like, all right, let me add some rhythm. Mm-hmm. And let me shrap, as I used to call it back in the day, sing rapping. And then now looking at the songs that I write now is more of like a challenge. No, I never want to try to write the same song. And especially since that's my goal out of everything, like being famous is cool, but really I just want to write songs for a living and, you know, give them to people. And if, you know, people are like, I don't want to sing that song, I'll be like, okay, well, I'll sing it then. And you know, if it blows up, if it does what it needs to do, then that's cool. But at the end of the day, I made somebody's day by telling a story. And beforehand, it wasn't me telling stories. It was me telling stories, but it was more of like me trying to cope with things, because music was my therapy. I feel like a lot of people do say that. And, you know, half of the people, it really is for their therapy, is like for their, you know, mental and everything. And other people is a matter of community. You know, because musicians are fucking weird. All right. Let's just go ahead and put that out there. Yeah. You want to be around other weird people. You want to be around people that are like you. And for me, and I was actually just having this conversation last night, it wasn't really a matter of me trying to be around the same people. It was a matter of me trying to keep my head on straight. And now since my head is on straight, you know, I'm doing the damn thing. It's like, okay, well, let's keep going. All right. Let's not talk about Zoe. Let's talk about Sarah Lou or, Ricky Bobby, I don't know. I'm just kind of throwing random names out, but you know, like give different scenarios that aren't per se about me anymore. And I think that's the beauty of songwriting is that you're telling a story. Like no matter what, at the end of the day, you're still telling a story, and people want to hear it. You know, that's just a thing.
You know, you say that you're still kind of learning music production, those skills, and that, as you just said, you are all about writing the song. So what is your favorite part of the songwriting process? Like from the blank page with no chords to the final product, what excites you?
That's a really good question that I have to think about. It's always the first line. It's always the first line. And I used to have this pet peeve of mine, and actually my first mentor, Joe Stevenson. Oh, hi. I forgot my dog was in here. Sorry about that. What's up, Riley? My first mentor, Joe Stevenson, he would tell me, he was like, don't start a song off with I. Don't start a song off with you. Don't start a song off with she. Don't start it off with he. And I was like, why? He was like, because everybody knows that it's partially about you or partially about somebody. Why don't you make it a phrase? where that is the thing that hooks people in. So the first line is always the most exciting part, because that basically tells you where to go after that. Like before, it was making the music of just like, okay, what am I playing on the guitar? But now it's like, okay, what is the hook? And for me, you know, in standard pop songs, like the hook is the chorus always. But for me, the hook is always the first line, because if you can bring them in with the first line, then everything else will be good. Like with Complicated, you know, I've got a problem. She's 5'10", skinny like a model. Like that's so descriptive. And it's like, that's kind of funny. And then he continues to, you know, she lived by the bottle and she's tempting me like the devil now. And it just keeps going. And then you know kind of where the end result is going to be, go at least. So yeah, that first line is always the best part.
When, and this, I ask this question of every artist that we have on the show, but like, when do you think this song is done? And I should say, has working with some of the folks at Loose Groove, especially Stone, how have they changed your approach to that process?
Always be open. You know, earlier, as I said, like community is important. Don't get me wrong. But for me, that wasn't the reason why I was doing music. It was always for me. It was the selfish thing. So, you know, before I was working with Stone, and actually in the beginning processes of working at Loose Groove or with Loose Groove, you know, I was very stuck in my ways of just like, no, I want it to sound like this. I want it to be like this. And I took a little break because of some personal things and came back. And that was the first thing that Stone told me. He was like, you got to be open if we're going to make this work. And I was like, okay, I'll try my best. And, you know, to answer your question of like, when do you know that the song is like finished? You never know if the song is finished. That, I think that for me is something that I had to learn, because even in the final mix and the final master, you can hear something and be like, nah, that should have been taken out, or this should have been added, or I hear this lick going this way.
Just one last overdub, producer.
Just one last overdub. let's make it really big in the end. So
can we do strings? Can we bring the whole string section in? No.
It's already been released. And I'm like, we could do a remix. I think that is kind of the cool part, because it is kind of like songwriting, where when somebody listens to a song and listens to the lyrics, it's based off of their own interpretation. So even in a recording, somebody who may be musically inclined, may not be musically inclined, they could hear something that they think that would be really cool, and then they just start singing it. And then you then have covers, of course, after that, and you know, people doing their own version. So I think that is like kind of the best part of being done with a song in a recording fashion, because there's always a what if, you know. Same way of what if this song does well? What if this song tanks? What if this song is, you know, the next thing that Oprah talks about? You know, it's all about the what ifs, and the what ifs kind of keep you inspired, because then you just want to keep, you know, making something and trying to top the other one. And maybe the things that you heard in the other song, you want to add that to the next song that you try to record. So, yeah.
Plus, you know, when you're playing these songs live, as a lot of bands do, including Pearl Jam, you can obviously mess around with stuff and like decide, I'm going to extend this interlude by 8 bars, or I'm going to do something else with this part. And that's what makes the live experience so special, because you might know that song, the studio version of the song, so well. Be like, oh, I saw him over at the Rabbit Box and he did this one thing. And then the next night at the Paramount, he like didn't do that. He did something else. And like, that was two different really cool versions of the song that sounds different from that. I love that. I love when artists just decide to like go off on little tangents and make each performance unique. But let's go back to Seattle, the city that you are calling home now. You know, as a Pearl Jam heavy show, you won't be surprised to know that most of our listeners/viewers are well older than you, because you were born in 1999. which makes me chuckle to think that is even a thing. Bless your heart. And you have said that you didn't know really anything about any of the bands that blew up in the 80s and 90s. And I think that that's awesome because don't feel embarrassed. Again, 1999, everybody, young man. I think it gives you a really interesting perspective on that music. Like what bands or songs from the Seattle heyday, speak to you now that you've had a chance? I assume, have you had a chance to listen to any of this music since?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And so what jumped out to you?
So what's jumped out to me?
And don't feel compelled to be like, oh, all those Pearl Jam songs.
Oh, yeah. No, trust me. Yeah. Even when I talk to Stone, I'm like, I still don't know any of your music. and I said that last, during the show at the Paramount, and people were like, what?
Yeah. I was like, how could you? It's sacrilegious.
Exactly. Like, don't throw shit at me. All right. I'm from Georgia. And again, to your point, yeah, I'm born in 99. How would I know? growing up in Georgia, the only bands that I knew from Seattle were Nirvana and Soundgarden. I really only knew one Soundgarden song, which was Black Hole Sun. And Stone Temple Pilots, Plush, because my dad used to listen to Stone Temple Pilots a lot.
Well, they're not from Seattle, I don't think.
Okay, that's a SDP. Thank you for correcting me, because
I'm pretty sure they're not.
Somebody told me that. Like,
I think they're from San Diego, actually. Now that I'm thinking about it.
You know what? Scratch
Which is
that
not
thing.
Even the same.
Not even same the same area is. Code, but the same coast. Yeah. I mean,
but Black Hole Sun and Smells Like Teen Spirit, I imagine, are the two songs that you would
actually
hear.
Mine was all Apologies. That was the first.
Oh, okay. That's a big hit too.
Yeah. But when I moved here and just talking to Stone, I didn't like the first song I listened by Pearl Jam was probably Jeremy, because that was like the number one song on like Spotify. But then I later recognized that I did know at least one more song because of Guitar Hero 3.
Oh yeah. Alive, Even Flow.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, so that's your stuff.
That's them.
That's them. And like, I have a different appreciation for the Seattle music scene now, or like back then, than now, because I feel like now it's trying to find the next thing. But back then it kind of seemed like it was all the same subject matter, just from a different voice. So like when I listened to Jeremy, I actually kind of really like Jeremy, because I mean, I haven't talked to Eddie Vedder about it, because I'm very interested in kind of knowing like what was the backstory behind it. But, you know, in my head, it's a kid that is kind of demented, and because of his home life, and kind of wants to take it out on other people. And with Smells Like Teen Spirit, it's just Kurt Cobain yelling a lot, but you know, you feel it. And Chris Cornell, of course, you know, it's just, you know, all of his lyrics are just very, it hits you very deep. And I feel like with the music back then, it had a bigger meaning than kind of what you would hear on the radio. Even though, of course, From a Georgia person, you know, listening to it, it's like, damn, that's a lot of noise. Why are they crack-a-lacking on the guitar so much? And who's this young man screaming? Like,
what's he so angry about?
What is she so angry about? But when you are living here, and then you kind of see people living here, and you meet people that grew up here, and or just like that's their life. It's like, oh, that makes more sense now of like why the music sounded this way. And, you know, I won't hate on it. Now, I will say that I don't know who Pro Jam is.
It's okay. It's okay. It's a safe space, Osher.
It's a safe space. And Stone laughs at it all the time. So just letting everybody know, I've said it like probably 3 times.
Yeah, this isn't the first time.
Like, yeah, it's not,
Paramount. Like, oh, no. It's out there.
It's already out there. I said it during my KPNW interview. And actually, so this is funny, just talking about Pearl Jam. So as I said earlier, I met Stone through Thaddeus Turner, who is the co-founder of Total.
You're segueing perfectly into my next question. Let's tell that story.
Ooh, awesome. Yeah. Sweet.
It's like you're co-producing this episode.
Because I have clairvoyance. You know, I watch a lot of anime, so I know how it works.
Do you dance to that clairvoyance?
No. Just because, you have to focus.
Song reference, by the way.
Oh, really?
They have a song called that.
Damn, I was going to just make a really good joke, and now I feel like...
Make it.
It's too late now. It's too late, and I kind of forgot it now. Sorry. It's all good. but I met Stone through Thaddeus, and it was actually during the pandemic. It was 2020, I think. And we still had the doors open at Totem Star for people to come in and still make music. Of course, in a safe space, everybody had masks on and stuff. And I wrote this song called American Dream because it was around the time that literally the world was going to shit with George Floyd and, you know, the insurrection and all that. And we're not going to get into politics, but give you context of kind of like what was all happening. So I wanted to try to write an anti-war song. And Stone happened to be in the other room for Arts Corps, like a board meeting or whatever. And Thaddeus is like, "Hey man, you know, Stone Gossard is over there." Of course, in my head, I'm like, who the fuck is that?
What's a stone? What's a stone?
What's doctor? A stone? And of course, actually, that was my first question in my head was like, who names their child Stone? He walks in and he has a mask on. So also to tell everybody, I didn't know how Stone looked like for technically 3 years.
Did you not ever do Zooms where he was maskless?
No.
Wow.
No. Like, and even when
that is a fun shock, though. Like, I remember going to like my kids' preschool, and like they'd all have masks on, and like one day, like you know, a year and a half ago, the masks come off, and I was like, "Oh, that's your chin." Okay. Not like in a bad way. I'm just like, I'm like just thrown. Yeah. That's the shape of your face. That's interesting. I didn't know that.
It's kind of crazy. Even still, like when I see people wear masks now and then they take them off, I'm like, wow, that's your whole face. I feel like we're
It sounds so mean when we say it, but it's not mean.
Like, you can say it like, your face. Oh my God, that's your face. Or
that's your face. Oh my God.
Like, you know, like, and it's even then when you try to sound endearing, it still sounds really
sounds like condescending. You can't make it sound good.
Yeah, it's really bad. But I did not know how that man looked for like 3 years. And Thad got me to meet Stone. We all worked together. As I said earlier, I had some personal stuff that I needed to sort through. So I kind of stopped talking to Stone for a little bit just to kind of get my own thing together. And it would be so funny. Stone would literally like either call me every 2 weeks or text me. And then he would text Thad. And then Thad would be like, "Hey, man, you know, he's young. He needs to figure out his life." And Stone would be like, "You know what? You're totally right. You're totally right. You know, I'm just going to wait until he calls me."
Meanwhile,
back.
Like, there's a million songwriters out there who are like, "Why are you not returning Stone Gossard's text messages? Exactly. Oh my God.
Exactly.
You crazy person.
Exactly.
What are you doing?
What the hell is wrong with you?
You got to do you, though, man. You got to do you."
Yeah, you got to know the greatest quote ever. You got to put on your mask first. So I called him. I was like, "Hey, I think I'm ready." He was like, "Okay, let's go meet at this coffee shop." And I go to the coffee shop. And again, context, did not know what this man looks like. He was there. And I was there. I was standing there for like 15 minutes trying to figure out where the fuck this man was.
No, sure.
And I'm looking around and I get a call from him. He's like, "Hey, are you here?" I'm like, "Yeah. Where are you?" And he stands up. And I was like, "Oh my God, you blend in with every Seattle person ever." But from then on, that's kind of where our relationship started building up. And we're still learning about each other. And I think that is kind of the coolest thing is that, one, he doesn't try to force anything out of me, which I can appreciate. And I don't try to expect that he'll give me everything, right? Because it's all about, you know, the relationship. You know, it's not about transactional kind of things happening with me and Stone. It's really about, you know, you're somebody in the somebody that's been in the industry forever, and I'm a young kid trying to get into the industry and not in the fashion of what it is today of like, oh, you know, you just post on social media 24/7 and you know, have a TikTok blow up and you make a TikTok song. Like, I don't want to be a one hit wonder. I want to be like a Pearl Jam. I want to be like an Ed Sheeran. I want to be like a Lenny Kravitz where you have longevity and not just one song that ends up doing well. So he gets that. I send him music all the time. It got to a point where I wrote 110 songs last year. And he probably like by May, right when we were about to record Sun Song, he was like, I'm going to be honest, man. I'm not telling you to stop sending me songs, but it's kind of hard to keep up. Can you put them all in a Dropbox? And I was like, okay, I guess I put them all in the Dropbox. and he still hasn't listened to all 100 songs, but you know, it's just really cool, one, to get a new ear. And you know, he'll even say, he's like, I'm not a songwriter like you. Like, you just keep doing things. Which of course, he is a songwriter like me. Because
Let me ask you, like, you've had this pretty close working relationship now for at least a year, maybe year and a half, 2 years. I think our listeners would look at Stone and say he is one of the greatest rock songwriters of a generation. Mm-hmm. You know, so what does it, like, what kind of knowledge, what kind of wisdom, expertise has he imparted to you with this relationship that you have?
It's really interesting because on the flip side, he'll be like, I learned so much from you. So, but the biggest thing that
that's a compliment and a half.
I know, which is kind of crazy. He's like you just keep on just doing it and you don't think about it. But the biggest advice that he ever gave me was space. You know, Ed Sheeran is my biggest inspiration, and I can think about You Need Me, I Don't Need You, Take It Back. What's another song that he uses? Sing, and how he's just used his words on top of words, you know, just constant, mm-hmm. constant. And a lot of my songs used to sound like that. And then he just was like, try adding space. And of course, I was like, what the fuck do you mean by that? Like, this is my style.
Let it breathe, baby.
Let it breathe. And that was the best advice that he ever gave me. And now when I write songs, like, it's just natural to have space. Whereas before, like, when I was trying to do that, and I can't remember what song I wrote when he told me that, I would have to go back in our text. But it was a struggle. It was like, Jesus. How the fuck do I not try to add something here? Because I'm so used to doing that. And you know, it was just that, but I think like on the flip side, when he would tell me like, oh my God, like when I listen to your songs, like it inspires me because it's kind of weird. Like you use very interesting phrases, you know, it's not just you kind of, it's not word soup or like you're not trying to say what everybody else is saying. You try to say it in a quirky way, in a funny way. And that just came naturally, just thinking about like how you can turn a phrase around. And I still learn things when it comes to music from him, but from the songwriting standpoint, it's always about space, half space. That's probably the biggest thing. And honestly, Stone is a great songwriter. I've listened to the tracks that he's like, I wrote this. He sends them to me and I listen to it. And I'm like, actually, that's really good. Like, I really,
what
like
does that. He send you?
I can't tell
you. I want to know what Stone thinks are his favorites, are his like best songwriting performances.
I actually don't have my phone right now, but he was God, like,
blessed Zosher.
Cause I feel like he said that he wrote at least a good amount of songs on their second album, Verses. Is that their second album?
Reverse that. He wrote most of the stuff on the first record.
First record, yes.
Ed was more involved in the songwriting on the second one.
Okay, yeah. But you know, rephrase that. He said that his favorite album was the second one.
Really?
Yeah. Which was very interesting because I think that was the album that I listened to from Pearl Jam, and I was like, this is good. I kind of like the first one more.
This is good.
This is all right. I think really, I don't remember the songs that he sent me, but it was kind of like, you know, he'll send a song, and mind you, he doesn't know all the titles of my songs. So it's kind of like, oh, okay, this is mutual. Again, what I said about Chris Cornell, like, you have this feeling when you listen to the lyrics. That's what I got from listening to what he was writing. Stone is just ultra talented. And it's so funny when he plays the guitar on stage. I'm sure when he was younger, it was much different. But now he just stands in one spot and he makes this face of like, but he's really feeling it.
I call it the stone chicken head.
The stone chicken head.
He just does the neck bob forward and backwards. That's when you know he's grooving.
Mm-hmm. Like you just know that he's feeling it. So, yeah.
You have said that your favorite artists are the ones that make you feel the way you need to feel in the moment.
Damn, yeah, I all my say, quotes.
I got quotes, bro. I would say that many of the most successful artists are the ones that do this consistently. And it's probably the biggest reason why me and most of our listeners love Pearl Jam so much, because they do that very well, or have for 30 some odd years. Mm-hmm. Do you find it challenging to articulate your truth in a way that will speak to someone else's soul?
No. When it comes to writing, no. When it comes to actually talking to somebody, yes. but when it comes to writing, as I said beforehand, it was me writing about myself. And then eventually I started writing about other people that I knew and kind of their situations. So, you know, having a different perspective for different things. And, you know, I just, like, I'll have songs that are just, like, complicated, like, really fun. Like, you know, it's more of a dancing kind of thing, but I have songs that haven't been released that are really, like, talking about kind of struggling with self, with the world, with somebody that may not be, like, your significant other. It could be, you know, a family member. It can be a friend. I think for me, it's just like, that is what songwriting is supposed to be. From my perspective, it's just that you should be able to, like that quote said, which I totally forgot about that quote, but a song should help you when you need to hear it. You know, a great example is Everything's Not Lost by Coldplay. It's the last track off their first album. And I really love that song. And whenever I'm in a very dark place, I listen to it. And it's like I cry it out a little bit. When I snap back in and I'm like, it's all right. Keep going. Mm-hmm. And everybody should have songs like that. Whether it's a matter of you being happy, sad, confused, in love, not in love, you know, all the emotions that everybody goes through. Jealousy. Who hasn't listened to Nick Jonas's I Still Get Jealous song? But, you know, like there's always a feeling that everybody has felt. And every song may not be every song that you may write, but every song has that one feeling, or, you know, two feelings. So yeah, that is the key to my madness, is just let people feel the feels, you know?
Yeah. I want to ask you about the artist brain, and especially because you have a relatively younger artist brain than a lot of the people that have been on this show. A lot of the artists that we've spoken to, pretty much all of them, are older than you. So you're going to have an interesting perspective on this idea. So tell me about having an artist brain and what it means to you, and how places like Totem Star that you mentioned before kind of helped guide and nurture that.
Artist brain sucks, first and foremost, because it's basically ADHD multiplied. But artist brain is, like, I guess when you have the energy, you can literally do everything in your head. Like you're just like, I can accomplish whatever. Like when I'm in this room, and recording my stuff, and like my mom, she won't see me for like 3 hours. And she'll just be like, she asked me one time, so when you are doing music, are you just so tuned in that you can't do anything else? I'm like, yeah. And that's really what artist brain is. Same way that an athlete gets into the zone when he's having a really good game. That's how artists work. And it's really cool, but really bad on the flip side, because, you know, your brain is everywhere. So like with you recording a song, you're hearing everything. It's a bunch of stuff hearing everything. When you're doing a task that is life related, you do everything except the task. So it's good and bad. And there's somebody in our camp that's absolutely great. Billie Jean. Yes, that's her actual name.
From the Orchard, right?
Yeah, from the Orchard. And I remember she told me, she was like, I hope you don't think I'm bossing you around. I was like, no, please do. Cause I never, I will forget and not do it.
Yeah.
So artist brain is, as I said, good and bad. It just depends on the day and what you're doing.
Very good. Very good. Let's talk about Ocean Blue. Mm-hmm. That song to me feels very full circle for you to my ears. Let me explain. You know, I thought your first release, Mrs. Valentine, was kind of you emulating Ed Sheeran, as I kind of mentioned earlier. And I mean that in a good way. Ocean Blue is like a Sheeran emulation that's the result of years of working on your craft and like leveling up, you know, as you've gone, you know, so much so that it's a song that I could see Ed covering at one point of his shows. That's how good it is. I don't really have a question per se. I just wanted to tell you that.
Oh, thank you so much, Jason.
As someone who prides himself on songwriting like you do, and you know, referencing how much you admire him, and I see your growth explode between these two points. And yeah, it's only like what, 3 or 4 years apart, but like there's trying to do your own Ed Sheeran thing. And then taking all of that expertise and wisdom that you've done and you've gone through, and then, you know, the multiplier of Loose Groove and Stone and all that stuff and Billie Jean, and hearing Ocean Blue, which is like, I think it's as good. I think he would cover it. I think he should cover it.
Oh,
let's get it out there. Hey, let's
let him know. Yeah.
Let the algorithm just put that out there right now. SEO, all the terms. What do you think about that? Do you think that's a thing?
I think it's definitely a thing. Ocean Blue happened by accident, actually. Yeah, I wrote that in like most of my songs, like in 30 minutes, but I got done writing another song that happened. Like the first chord of the doo happened to be like two tones away from whatever last song I was writing. And then it just came to be with the do 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 do. And I felt like that was more of my style of, you know, that rhythmic kind of feeling and with how the lyrics are displayed. And it still had kind of that Southern rock flair in a sense, but it still had that Ed Sheeran pop feel. I would love for him to cover one of my songs. I think my brain, I would literally lose it. If
would you
ever
cease
happened.
To be? Would you be a puddle on the floor?
Yes. I would probably lay in my bed crying happy tears, but then like I don't want to even listen to it. I'm just gonna wait one day until I meet him and he sings the song to me.
There you go.
But yeah, Ocean Blue is just, it really is a great song to me. And when we did the Loose Groove review in LA, I'm a person that really doesn't write out my sets until like literally 2 hours before I'm supposed to go on, which I need to change. And I think I played one new song, Man on the Moon with Johnny Polonsky. Echoes, which is a love song, great song. And then I was like, I need something else. And literally 2 days prior, I wrote Ocean Blue. So Stone and Billie Jean never heard Ocean Blue. And I played it. I fucked up like during soundcheck. And I was like, okay, well, I'm still going to do it. And I did it. Yeah. Like, and I remembered all my lyrics, which was very impressive. And literally got off stage and Stone and Billie Jean were like, what the fuck is that song? I was like, oh yeah, that's a new song that I wrote. They're like, yeah, that's the next one. Yeah, we're gonna record it. Which is so funny. Again, little segue. Stone forgets the title name of that song. Like after it came out, he forgot the name of the song. He knew the song like music wise, but he would always be like, Ocean 11?
What are oceans anyways? It's not yellow. What is it?
Exactly. But now like it's gotten to a point where he does know the song, but when we would talk about it before, it would just be like, yeah, that ocean song.
Ocean song. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, pretty cool.
Well, I love the song. I think it's fantastic. If you couldn't tell. Now, you say that you're a lover, not a fighter.
Yes.
A hopeless romantic, right? When I listen to your music, that romanticism doesn't start and end with romantic love to me. I think it's more than that. I think it's self-love. I think it's a zest for life. I think, you know, to love your own journey, you know, warts and all the hardships, everything. And it's always looking forward. It's very positive. Do you agree with that?
Yes and no.
Because I haven't heard the negative stuff.
Yeah, you haven't heard the negative stuff yet. Okay. But I think it's always about the journey. Especially with every song that I write, it's like it's a rise. It never starts off high. And, you know, like I love the past two songs that we've done, but I also know that like I'm a lover, not a fighter. So, you know, being in those type of relationships, I don't really per se like subscribe to that of just kind of being in that place of God, I want to leave this person. I'm more of the person of like, oh my God, I could eat you up. Like you're the bee's knees. I just love you so much. But I also
the cat's pajamas.
You're cat's pajamas. But also know it has to start off somewhere. So it's always that place of you trying to get to know the person. So you know, and that's kind of part of life, regardless of if you're trying to be with somebody romantically or if it's platonic. You know, nobody just, you know, even Pearl Jam fans, I'm sure, like, yeah, the first thing could be Pearl Jam, and then you talk about PB&Js and they'll be like, I don't really like peanut butter, and then you're like, fuck this guy. So you know, you are learning about somebody as you get to really be with them, and I think that's the coolest thing about writing love songs, because no love song should just start off with I love you so much, Buttercup. Like it's always like Buttercup. Yeah, Buttercup. I don't know who Buttercup is, but
okay, 2024, you just had the Loose Groove Party. What's coming down the pike? What are your plans for the rest of this year?
Hopefully an EP, hopefully some more songs. Definitely more written songs and more shows. So can't tell people where I'm going to be next because I don't know. But when y'all will know is when I post it and let y'all see, of course. But I think, as I said, like during the Rabbit Box show, for me, performing is great. Like, it's fun. I can do it. It's fine. I can be funny on stage. It's all good. But the biggest thing to me is writing. So I hope something comes along the line where, you know, I can write a song for somebody. And, you know, it doesn't have to be the biggest person, but, you know, a moderately big person that, you know, I could say, oh, I finally, I accomplished a piece of my dream. So hopefully writing for somebody. EP, definitely. It should be in the works hopefully soon. And yeah, a couple of more singles. But always stay tuned on Zozier Official, on Instagram, TikTok, and all the other stuff.
See, that was Billie Jean getting into your head and saying, promote your goddamn socials.
Oh, yes, yes, definitely. Because she also wanted to say, thank you so much, for interviewing me. And secondly, wanted to say, we love Zozier so fucking much. So yeah,
that's true. That's true. I heard that too.
Yeah. Great lady. Love her so much.
Well, I want to say thank you for sticking around and talking to me for so long today.
No problem.
Getting to know you, man. And I've really enjoyed your music. And it's only been a short time, but I've consumed it. And I hope that you come down to LA soon again.
I hope so,
too. And play here. And yeah, it's been a pleasure. And
yeah, thank you so much for having me. This has been a pleasure. I wish my dog could say hi, because she's like, oh my goodness, you've been talking forever and you're not talking to the person that you usually talk to. Thank you again, Jason. And this has been really fun. I now know that I have quotes that are online. I look forward to doing another one of these later along the line. And hopefully we'll see Ed Sheeran do a cover of Ocean Blue.
There you go. Thank you to Zosia for coming on. That was awesome. And again, if you're interested in getting more content, we've got a Patreon right there. All kinds of extra conversations, stuff that didn't make the full episode. Just extra conversations with people who talk about their posters that they make or the photos that they take and the stories behind those kinds of things. Really cool stuff over there if you want to help us out and get more content. That's the place to go. Otherwise, rate, review, subscribe on your podcast platform of choice. I'm trying to remember what Paul says. And if you're on YouTube, subscribe, like the video, hit the bell, and that's everything. So once again, thank you to Zosia for coming on the show, and we'll see you next week. And until we do, you've been listening to The State of Love and Trust.